Hey, welcome back to Channel 9 Live at Tech Ed North America. I'm with distinguished engineer and lead architect of Windows Server, Jeffrey Snover.
Howdy, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, how are you?
Yeah, doing great.
So thanks for joining us. Now, there's one big question that weighs on my mind. We've just come, the folks at home have been watching the keynote.
Yeah.
They've just been watching Scott Guthrie on Learn Windows Azure, which we're gonna get back to here shortly. But my question for you that came out of the keynote, talk about the designing, and Satya talked about building Windows Server to be a cloud-optimized operating system.
Yeah.
What's a cloud-optimized operating system, first of all?
Sure. So the operating system is actually a pretty simple beast, right? It has two responsibilities. First is to abstract hardware, and the second is to provide a set of application services. Okay, and so the traditional operating system, you know, we abstracted the underlying server, but for a cloud OS, what we want to do is we want to abstract the underlying data center. So instead of saying, one version of the operating system, you know, ran on one CPU, and then as chips began to have multiple CPUs, we had to modify the OS to support multiple CPUs. Now we've got to modify the OS to say, hey, there are multiple CPUs across different instances of servers, etc. And it's now no longer just about the server itself. It's the servers, you know, raw physical hardware. It's the storage, and it's the networking. So you have to combine all those things together and essentially produce a new data center hardware abstraction layer, or HAL. And that's one of the reasons why standards-based management are so critical, because a lot of these devices, you know, might be running embedded operating systems or different versions of Windows, and so you have to have a common way to talk to all those things. Well, one approach is to say, well, for the storage guys, we go talk to this, and well, for this storage vendor, here's the way we talk to his stuff, and for this network vendor, here's the way we talk to that, and that's just going to fail. Right, and so instead what we said was the only way to succeed with a data center HAL is to adopt standards-based management. Now, that was something we'd been doing for a long time,
sure.
But we just really re-upped our investment in that. So that's one element. You cloud-optimize the OS by, instead of focusing it on a server, focusing on the data center. And the second is to provide a set of application abstractions that solve basically a cloud problem. And a cloud problem is, hey, how do I have elastic applications, right, that grow? You know, oh boy, I put this out there, and hot dog, man, people are using it. And instead of saying, oh, now I got to go buy some servers and I got to provision those servers, it's like, I have customers in the morning, I'm satisfying the request immediately, and if that tap dries out, that I can scale down as well, so that I don't have to continue paying for those things. So what are the application frameworks, and what are the application services that allow you to build an application like that? Oh, and there's one more trick, and that is, in the cloud, you're often being connected to by these heterogeneous devices,
right?
And so how do we have cloud application services that make it easy to go talk to them? So it's really kind of a shift in focus.
When you initially had the challenge to basically go through and almost re-architect, maybe? Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Is that kind of how you looked at it? It's like, wow, we've got to clear our heads. We've got to start from zero. Or were there a lot of, was there a groundwork kind of laid out to kind of start the shift, at least from that underlying, particularly at the HAL level?
Yeah. Well, the good thing is we're dealing with a great asset to begin with. Windows has been a great asset. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of this is, and you bring up a very good point. If you take a look out in the industry, what you see is a lot of bolt-ons, right? They'll just say, oh, well, I have this existing OS and I'm going to bolt something on. Or I got these applications and I'm going to, you know, they're all kind of screwed up, but I can whack them from the outside and try and get something that's nice. And that's not the approach we took at all. We took an approach that said, hey, what needs to happen where? Now, let me be clear. You know, it's going to take a long time to get a full cloud, you know, the entire industry to the cloud.
Right.
So there's lots to do. But the approach we're taking is to do the deep engineering at each layer of the stack required to have a fully integrated solution, not some bolt-on. And it takes a big company like Microsoft with the ability to invest at the level we're able to invest to tackle this problem.
Now, you talked a little bit about that application portion as well.
Yeah.
What kind of learnings do we get from even running this stuff within the old applications that we're running within Microsoft, or even some of the early learnings of Windows Azure that you looked at immediately and went, we got to get that sucker right into Windows Server.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the point. We spent a lot of time planning and talking to the people using it. Now, it's one thing to go and you know, talk to somebody and you know, you hear about their pain. It's another thing to actually be living that pain, right? To have the people who are trying to run these services and experiencing it. You know, I like to tell the story about how as a kid I did a lot of martial arts. And I went to this one school that was a no-contact school, and I thought, I don't know how that's going to work. And because I had come from this hardcore Japanese style where they just beat the crap out of you. And so I go to this school, and the guy's like, no, that's the way to do it, non-contact, et cetera. And so there was this high-level student, she was ready to get her black belt, and whenever she would fight, she'd have her hands up like this, and then they'd go down to her waist. And the instructor would say, hands up, and she'd bring her hands up, and then they'd go back down. I said, you know, just pop her. Just hit her in the face, lay her out, and I guarantee her hands will go up. And he said, no, we couldn't possibly do that. Well, guess what? A year later, her hands are still down at her waist. So what I'm trying to say is that there's no teacher like pain. Pain is your friend. Pain is your teacher. And as we've tried to take, essentially an enterprise operating system and run it in a cloud environment, there's pain involved. And we've experienced those pains. Mm-hmm. And then we've used that to feed into the development of the operating system. And so
now that you mentioned this whole Japanese thing, I might scoot over a little bit just in case one of my questions. So folks, you at home can also join in the conversation with Jeffrey. Tweet your questions to hashtag CH9Live. Otherwise, I'm going to just sit here and talk all day with you.
Sounds great.
But folks, you can ask your questions, hashtag CH9Live. I want to continue on this path around Windows Server. We're going to get to some PowerShell. I can't have you on here without talking about PowerShell.
Sure.
But I want to chat a little bit more around this operating system. When we were chatting a little bit earlier, one of the great things is I have an opportunity to chat with you a few minutes earlier. We talked a lot about, like, what are the key kind of main features in Windows Server 2012? And my first question to you is, it's got to be the management, right? You're the PowerShell guy. You came back to me and you said, it's storage.
Yeah.
And it's transformation and storage. So we showed something in the keynote today, Jeff. It was amazing. 10 gig in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
First of all, can I have that server for underneath my desk in my office? Or secondly, talk about what it took.
Bill Gates can.
Yes, he can. I probably don't. I don't have that kind of cash, actually. Talk a little bit about the things that you had to do and get underneath re-architect or the transformations that we've had to make in storage.
Yeah, no, in all honesty, it's hard to pick what's the most exciting. I mean, we just hit a home run with the virtualization, with
sure.
the storage, the networking, the management. So they're all great. But the thing that I'm so impressed with our storage stack is the level of just hardcore engineering that went on at each layer of the system. So again, this is definitely not one of those bolt-ons. I mean, we went in and analyzed how it is that we talked to the devices, right, the disks, and we altered the way we flush data so that you can have greater reliability on these very inexpensive commodity disks. Okay? Then we went and said, hey, what are some of the big problems people have around the disks, right? And check disk. And check disk used to have these very, you know, kind of non-linear response rates. And that's why officially the recommendation has been to have to limit the size of the volumes to a relatively small number.
Right.
Because if you have a problem, you can have very long, you know, up to hours, days, and greater repair times. And so we went and changed that. First, we repair a number of the problems on the fly. So we'd look for these things and fix it. You don't even know about it. Next is we have the ability to analyze the disk in the background, off in a, you know, a background mode. And then when we do have to make a repair, we take only a portion of the volume offline, fix it. And so the, you know, basically the volume's offline for, like, you know, milliseconds at a time. So fantastic there. Then we have a new file system, the REFS. Mm-hmm. That's a brand new file system. Then we have a different way to aggregate the disks with storage pools, to have thin provisioning, deduplication, just amazing stuff there, mirroring. And then we've got clustered share volumes with SMB. We went to SMB version 3. Mm-hmm. Dramatic changes there. So I don't know if you've seen the demos. I mean, these demos just make my head explode, right? Thomas Fenning and Jim Pinkerton, superstar guys. They have this demo where they get up and they had these two servers. This was at the Storage Developers Conference, yeah? And they had this two machines, high throughput, and they had a gigabit Ethernet, and they had the chart showing, you know, bandwidth throughput and CPU utilization. I said, oh, look, this, you know, we refined our stack. This is doing really well. Then went and connected in a 10 gigabit Ethernet, and all of a sudden the bandwidth goes way up, as does the CPU utilization. They then unplugged that. By the way, you were able to do this because SMB is now multipath.
Right.
So we detect that there are new paths and we'll automatically use them. He then plugged in a 56 gigabit InfiniBand NIC that supports RDMA. And the bandwidth goes through the roof and the CPU utilization plummets. So now all you have fantastic bandwidth and CPU that can be used for the SQL workload or whatever the application is. So that was just stunning stuff. By the way, they demonstrated this at the keynote for the Software Developers Conference, or sorry, the Storage Developers Conference. It turns out you don't want to go to sdc.com. That's a very different website. It's sdc.org. Sdc.com is like the singles dating club or something. I had to explain to my boss, IT might be coming to discuss something with you. Let me explain
why, right? Exactly. when you talk about, I mean,
swingers dating club,
you talk about these re-architecting things.
Yep.
For you personally, and as the lead architect around this, what kind of mindset shifts do you have to kind of go through and just go, do you have to really clear your mind of everything that we know so far and then just go and try to absorb all of the new stuff?
Well, that is the task, right? The task is to unlearn things, right? And take a look at the challenges that you have and not be contaminated by things. Now, you have to also think that you have a green field. I mean,
right.
You have some incredible assets, mm-hmm. So you want to bring them to bear. And so that's one of the benefits of a senior architect. The senior architects are the ones that know when to ignore what they know and when to pay attention to things they know.
Yeah.
And the junior architects are very good at just, incrementalism, and they're very good at like throwing everything away and starting from scratch. It's finding that right balance is the key.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm just absolutely fascinated because it just seems every time we go and we advance technology, right? So you start advancing things to the point where, hey, look, CPU and memory, not necessarily the bottlenecks anymore. Now it's storage. Storage is like, hey, you know what? We'll solve this because we have CPU and memory available to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just go ahead and obviously network speeds, right? Network speeds is huge because it seemed like forever. We were just kind of stuck in this rut in network speeds.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden there's this big explosion.
Boom.
And now to be able to watch and say, you know what, we've got some more commodity type assets, right? We've got some things. Let's shift where the workload goes.
Yep.
That's incredibly cool. Now you've got me all excited around this.
It's fun stuff. I mean, it's dramatically fun stuff.
Absolutely. I want to address, we've got a question from Twitter. And for those of you at home watching, again, tweet hashtag CH9Live. I don't know if you can answer this question, but we'll throw it out there. There's a rumor about Azure using SSDs. True, false?
I don't know the answer to that.
You don't know the answer to that?
Yeah.
We'll ask Mark. Mark will be by later. Maybe he knows what's going on.
He knows everything.
He knows everything, absolutely. Now, I love sitting down and chatting with you because I'm a geek at heart.
Yeah.
And what I want to ask, this is kind of a crazy question. It's not the super deep technical question. What's your geek aha moment? Uh-huh. Where was it in your career or in your life that you went all of a sudden, holy crap, this is what I absolutely want to do?
Oh, sure.
Where's that moment that just went?
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. I was actually a physics student, and I just kept dropping out of college because I ran out of money. I have to go get a job and get enough money to come back, right? And so so I get at these jobs, and at some point I got a job at Storage Technology, right, making the disk drives. And there, I mean, it was a disastrous manufacturing process. I mean, from the things we started to the things that got out the door, we had like a 5% yield, to a complete disaster.
Wow.
So they were putting in a computerized manufacturing process, and through an odd set of things, I got put in charge of that. And so all of a sudden, I was able to use these computers and be able to say, hey, wait a second, I see some pattern here. How are you doing that? No, stop doing that. Do it this way. And all of a sudden, the next day, I'd see these yield increases. And when you've got a 5% yield, you can be a hero every single day.
Sure, absolutely.
And that's what was happening. And so I was able to use computers to have this dramatic effect on the business and then use that to say, well, boy, if I knew this and I knew that, then this would really be great. And so that's when I had it. I mean, I just got the hook and ended up dropping out doing computers ever since. So, in fact, I don't have a degree.
I'm the exact same way, right? Is it all the good intentions in the world, and then all of a sudden you find this thing? And at the time, I mean, computer science was it's code. I'm a network server guy, and it was much there for me in college. And it was the same thing for me. It's like, I have to do this.
This is
just, because it's just as much fun, right? It's sitting there screaming and yelling at a server that doesn't want to boot up or some problem, and the minute it's fixed, you just like, I am the king of the world. Right? One of those moments.
Exactly.
Like 5% yield, right? Reduce that thing, and you are the king.
Yeah, when I met my wife, we met at a startup company, and I remember she was not very impressed with me because I referred to the job as being a racket. And she's like, what are you talking about, a racket? I said, are you kidding me? This place, they let you in, you get to program the PDP-11 computer as much as you want, and they give you money. Is that insane or what? This is crazy.
I get to do everything that I love, and they pay me for it.
Exactly.
Well, again, folks, at home, hashtag CH9Live if you want to ask some questions. We've talked a little bit about Windows Server. I have maybe some pocket questions, but I'd be remiss if we didn't do the PowerShell thing.
Sure.
The creator, inventor, master of, right? I think you've got quite a crew here that follows you around in terms of PowerShell. They write songs for you.
They do. They do.
What was it that made you create it? Was there something that was just missing, or did you find maybe, hey, this is a better trick to do it?
Yeah, well, I always knew that when I came to the company, I knew we needed an automation strategy, and it needed to be command-oriented. The big breakthrough came when, back to I mentioned this thing about unforgetting things, you know, forgetting things and keeping things. And basically, I did a deep rethink of the Unix model. And I said, like, you know, because it was wildly successful, right? Just great stuff. You know, hats off to the Unix community. I mean, they did wonderful stuff. But I did a deep rethink, and I thought, well, so they A pipe to B, pipe to C. Why do they do that? I thought, oh, well, they do that because A doesn't do what you want it to do. It's like, well, duh. And I thought, well, why doesn't A do what you want it to do? And then I thought about that deeply, and I said, oh, well, that's the Unix model. The Unix model is you have small tools and you combine them together in a compositional model to solve bigger problems. And that's good because problems are always novel. You solve one thing, another problem comes up. And so you want to have this flexibility to do it. I said, yeah, but there's something more here. What's going on? And I realized that, well, A doesn't do what you want it to do because it tightly binds three separate steps into one. It gets objects, it processes objects, and it outputs objects. So when we say A doesn't do what we want it to do, and here's the key point, when we say A doesn't do what we want it to do, what we're really saying is that I didn't get the right objects, or I didn't process them the way I wanted, or I didn't output them as text the way I wanted it. So when you pipe it to B and C, what you're really doing is you're taking this text and you're trying to use prayer-based parsing to reverse engineer your way back to do something differently. And I thought to myself, well, why do you do that? Why don't you just put the pipeline with the objects? And it's like, yeah, why don't you just put the pipeline with the objects? And it's like, holy schmoly.
Yeah.
And so that's when I
knew. And that's kind of when it started.
Yeah. So is that, you know, like letting go, asking, you know, giving yourself permission to ask dumb questions. So, you know what, is about 2 years ago I became the lead architect for Windows Server. A huge increase in scope, right? And so, you know, pretty scary job.
Yeah.
And so I thought to myself, oh boy, I got to come up to speed on storage and now I've got to come up to speed on all those things. And so one of the things, best thing I ever did, I gave myself permission to ask dumb questions. And so I go and I say, oh, well, why do we do that? And a surprising number of times, you know, the answer, sometimes the answer was because this. I said, oh, thank you very much. And people were very nice about this.
Yeah.
But then sometimes people would say, I don't know. Like, well, maybe we shouldn't do that then. Like, yeah, it's a good point. So, you know, never underestimate the value of just asking a dumb, simple question.
I always say there's no such thing as a dumb question, only one that goes unasked.
There you go.
That's just kind of my motto there. Obviously, as we start to talk about a little bit more about questions. With PowerShell, this sucker has just really exploded.
It is.
I mean, within the management tools that we use on databases, I remember the initial time I looked at it and I went, that's really cool, but it's only going to let me do this much stuff.
Right.
And then the next year, and it widens out, and the next year. Now it's really kind of that core foundational piece of our management.
Yep.
I mean, the reality is the PowerShell is usually there before we build any UI over it.
Yep.
What's that like now to see this?
It's awesome. I tell you, you know, it's one of those things where you just knew what was going to happen, and then it just took a long time to get there. And it's like, you know, I think for most people to see, like, wow, it's just everywhere. And the answer is we've been building up to this for quite some time. Version 1, we had 130 commandlets. Version 2, we had 230. And now we've got over 2,400 commandlets. So just huge number. And so the thing is that a lot of people would come into PowerShell and say, oh, boy, this looks really cool. What can I do with it? And the answer was, well, 230 things, or you can start scripting yourself. Now, in reality, Exchange had a couple hundred, like 400, et cetera. Right. So the products had much better support. But in general, people ended up having to do a lot of scripting. Now, there's a whole group of people out here that just said, thank you. This is awesome. I'm just rocking. Exactly. They're bitheads. They just love this
stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
But a lot of the engineers, the operators just said, hey, you know, I want a world where I just think about what I want to type. I want to type it and get it. And they didn't get that until this release. And so now this release, we simplified the syntax. We got great coverage. We've improved the IntelliSense for the integrated script environment. We have show script. So this is a great time to learn PowerShell. If you haven't done it already, jump on the bandwagon.
No, I'm with you 110% on that, because I was always a little bit afraid of it. You're talking to a guy who packed around floppy disks of the batch files from every different job that he had.
Sure.
Because the challenges were always the same, right? How do I map printers? How do I do these things? And you write the script. You spend a ton of time writing the script, and then you just hold on to it. Like, it's your personal asset there.
Absolutely.
And I didn't want to change. Are you kidding me? Why would I want to change? I've got these. They already work.
Yeah.
Now when I saw PowerShell, I went, wait, I did all this work here, and it takes lines and sometimes minutes for these things to process.
Yeah.
Versus now in PowerShell, you write it in one line, boom, instantly get the information, the feedback that you need.
Exactly. And you know, starting a couple years ago, we started to get this steady drumbeat of people who would come up at these shows and just say, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, I remember at Tech Ed New Orleans, there's a drunk admin coming to me up at Bourbon Street saying, oh, thank you so much. And he said, you know, remember 2 years ago, the economy was just horrible.
Right.
And he was telling the story about how, you know, the year before, his boss said, you got to learn PowerShell. And he said, no, I don't want to. I'm a GUI guy. You know, I don't want to do that stuff. Boss said, that's the job. You got to do it. I said, fine. He says, a week later, I was having a blast. It's so much fun. Thanks so much. He says, and then a couple weeks ago, I went to get my yearly review. And honestly, you know, I topped out in my career about 5 years ago. So I knew it was going to be. I was going to get my regular 1%, maybe 2%. And so I went in, got the paper and said, thank you. And I was leaving. The guy says, stop, sit down, read it. He said, I was scared. I thought I was going to get fired. And so I read it. And I got a 17% raise. His boss said,
wow,
man, ever since you learned PowerShell, you've been so, you know, productive. You've just been hitting it out of the ballpark. Thank you so much. You're one of my most valued guys. And so, you know, we see a lot, you know, just steady drumbeat of these. I love the one last year at the show. Guy comes up, he says, yeah, well, you know, the boss came in, told everybody, hey, we got to get this information from all the servers, no matter what, has to happen by end of day Friday. So, you know, if you got to call your families, tell them you're going to be working late, go do that, because I need that information. He said, I sat back in my office, and I thought, wait a second. I think I can do that with PowerShell. He said, 10 minutes later, I got all the information. He said, I've spent a few more minutes. I put it in Excel. I said, wow, what'd you do next? He says, I took the rest of the day off. So I came back in the morning, showed the boss. I says, I was a hero. So anyway, so that's what makes me feel so good is not, oh, I've achieved this great technical achievement. By the way, it's not so much I. You know, I'm the kind of figurehead.
Yeah.
You've got a fantastic team of engineers and designers, right? But anyway, it's not that we achieve something great. It's that we've empowered people and they're powerful. My favorite blog of all time, some guy just started to learn PowerShell. He says, I did this. I said, I'm awesome. It's like, yes, you are, my friend. Yes, you are.
When you hear these things, does it just inspire you? Do you just want to run back to the office? And do you sometimes forget that you also have this whole other Windows Server thing and you just want to be like, we got to write some more. We've got to expand this. We've got to make it better.
It is a challenge. It is.
That is a tough thing. There was a question from Twitter. I didn't catch who got it because it just flashed on the screen really quickly. And somebody wanted to know your quick take on what's more important, certification versus degree. I know that's kind of tough in today's world, but I mean, it's a question.
Yeah,
especially now with IT changing.
Yeah, so here's the thing. At the end of the day, there are certain people who kind of formal things matter a lot to them, I'd avoid them as much as you can because they're kind of dopes, right? And what you want to do is you want to hire people, you want to work for people who value people who get stuff done. Mm-hmm. Right? And whether you have a degree or you don't have a degree sort of doesn't matter. And I've worked for those other companies. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, hey, you don't have a degree, you can't have these jobs. And those are companies that aren't actually doing very well.
Right.
So I think that's the, you know, so it's really just getting the ability to get things done, whether or not it's certificate or not. Now, I will say that people come in, you know, starting their career, those things tend to be important.
Right.
You know, I was very lucky that I worked in a time where they gave me a chance. Today, you know, if somebody knocked on Microsoft's door and says, hey, would you teach me how to program? You know, the door is not going to open for them.
Right. It's definitely, and even in today's world, the world of IT has changed. I mean, we talk about transforming the operating system.
Yeah.
You start transforming the operating system, the rest of IT has to transform along with it. Now, granted, we're a few years behind, as always, right?
That's
IT's not well known for being at the cutting edge when uh-huh. you start working at it in a real business, right? The job changes too.
Yeah.
And it's like, we got to catch up. I mean, those of us who have been running those same 10 batch files on our floppy disk have to catch up to the future.
Yeah. In fact, this Wednesday at the lunchtime, there's an entire session on that. I'm giving a keynote talk there about, you know, the big message I have is at the end of the day, each of us really has two jobs. One job is to get the task we have at hand done, and the second is to get it done in a way that maximizes our integrated lifetime earnings. Right? So you could say, oh, I have this problem I have to get done. I'll go do it like a buddy of mine's learning Scala, right? Scala language. Right. What?
What?
It's like, dude, it might be a wonderful language. You might have a whole blast, but I just guarantee when years from now, when you put on your resume, hey, I got 5 years of Scala, when it goes through one of those programs that analyze resumes, it's going to go into the bit bucket. You know?
There you go.
So you got to get your job done, and you get your job done in a way that maximizes your lifetime revenue.
Right. We have just a couple minutes left, but there's a couple more questions on Twitter. Sure. How does Microsoft work to broaden the commandlets that are supplied by partners?
Yeah. So first, we communicate our expectations. You know, we say, hey, here's what's expected. There's two answers. One, create a value chain. At the end of the day, I'm just a firm believer that what really matters is value. So you got to make it easy for people to do, and when they do it, they got to look back and they say, boy, I'm so glad I did that. So we've worked on the developer models to make it simple, simple, simple. We've developed a lot of tools to be able to consume things, so there's a lot of value. And so now anybody that writes commandlets, they plug into all the management tools, they plug into ISC, they get a scripting language, they get remoting, they get OData, so you get a REST API. Huge value there. So that's number one, value. Number two is communication, set expectations. And number three is we're modifying the logo program to require it.
Right, right, absolutely.
Yeah.
YBeta asks, what do you think is the next big we will start using servers for? Looking into your crystal ball, what do you think the next big challenge that servers are going to use to come?
Yeah, well, I think that, we talk a lot about the cloud, mm-hmm. and it's, but I think data is the big thing, you know, the big data. And by that, you know, some people mean very specific things when they say big data. I don't. What I mean is the ability to gather tons and tons of data and transform that into a business advantage. Now, maybe that's with Hadoop, maybe it's with data mining, maybe it's with business intelligence, but this ability to just gather tons of data. And this will change the way we, you know, a lot of our stack, right? How we access the data, where we distribute the computing, how we organize results, et cetera. And I think that's just going to be the big thing for the next 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, you really look at it, that there's just been so much. I mean, we've had data collection going on for a long time. Nobody's really doing anything with it. So obviously the next step, make your business better with it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're heading close. We're getting close to wrap up. Jeffrey, I would sit here and talk to you all day long, but we've got to get some other folks. Coming up next here on Channel 9 Live, we've got a special episode of Cloud Cover. With Scott Guthrie coming down to answer some questions, and then we will get you folks at home right back to the Learn Windows Azure event. You want to stay tuned for that because we've got Mark Rusinovich talking about Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service, something that I kind of have a little bit of a passion around myself. Sure. So make sure you stick around here all day long. We'll be back with another live episode. We've got Mark Rasinovich coming up, doing some Q&A with him. So stay tuned right here, Channel 9 Live at TechEd North America 2012 in Orlando.